Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Tuesday, May 29th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 160. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and joining me today, back from vacation, Patrick Klepek.
Yep, I'm here to take another vacation because I'm exhausted from my vacation.
But you were on vacation. Why are you exhausted?
My kid doesn't know how to relax. Can someone call her up? People are like, why did you go on the Giant Bombcast? And kind of funny. That doesn't seem like a thing a human does when they take a vacation.
No.
Because that's how you get away from your family for 3 hours.
God.
You go do a video game podcast with your friends. Oh. You don't have time to get a beer with them, but I can go talk to Brad and bullshit over a microphone for a couple of hours.
Speaking of kind of funny, Patrick, I heard you hate capitalism.
True. Oh, I've really enjoyed the response. Most of the response has been extremely good, but I think I opened up a response to like labor and unionization. There was a winding question someone had about that. It was like, I believe my exact phrasing was, if I channel my innermost Austin Walker, capitalism is bad, was the full quote.
So you even tried to shrug it off, and yet people came for you. Ugh. Rob,
actually, no. People were generally. People were generally actually really good about
right,
that.
That's
good. I got a lot of really good feedback about folks that had not really thought about
awesome.
Like some of the trickle down problems of capitalism and just like labor. Yeah, so it was good. It was good.
You've I appreciate reach new audiences. You know,
yeah. No, I mean the 100%. Like that is. I know that, like, you know, Greg Miller's talked about having folks like Jason Schreier and other people on that, you know, sort of talk a little more about issues in that direction. But it was cool to have a venue to talk about that stuff. So my thanks to Greg Miller and all the folks at the Bombcast for having me on and giving me a vacation from my vacation, I suppose.
Rob, I heard people coming for you too, except that they have submachine guns.
Yeah, I came. I could smell it. I could almost taste it. That chicken dinner was right there. It was right there. If I just cleared a living room properly, I would have won it.
Oh,
I think I would have won it.
What happened?
I got super, like, I got super lucky in some ways. It was on the desert map in the Southwest, uh-huh. And I'd already started way in that town with the water tanks, like, way in the Southwest. And I was so screwed, then I found the new car and drove that
That's
through, like,
car.
Three ambushes, which was one of the most exciting things I've ever done in my life. Because, like, these were big ambushes, dude. This was like some Black Hawk Down shit. Like, I was rolling through towns, and suddenly, just a cacophony of shots. I made it up to that small church that's overlooking the old monastery.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I've been there. Yeah,
yeah. And I bellied up there, and only one person came up there with the same idea, murdered him, and then the circle kept shrinking. And I kept being in the circle.
Nice.
And so I had a position. I was watching everything around me for miles. All I had to do was cover my six. Had to make it into that monastery. Cleared that. We were down to like seven or eight people at this point, and the zone is the size of a postage stamp. And now I had to leave the monastery and get down into the town.
Right.
And it was great, dude. Like, suddenly, I hear a bunch of smoke grenades going off, including mine. Like, everyone is flinging smoke into the street as they start this run down the hill into the town. Made it into a building, took some fire, ran up the stairs. By this point, like, six people have already died. And I swear to God, that living room was clear. I thought it was clear. And I ducked into a room to watch the other side of the town. And then a grenade flies through. the door and kills me. So it was top three.
That's how it goes. That's how it goes sometimes.
On the replay, I swear I looked right at the guy, and I guess he just didn't register.
Oh, that's just, you know, that's just expertise. That's just time. You just need to work some more hours, and eventually you'll get. Sounds like you're already getting top threes. It's within reach.
Them moments like that are what hook you for like another 20 hours yep. of like bad runs.
Totally.
Yeah, that run was I already couldn't sleep because I've been playing PUBG before bed. So I'd gotten back out of bed to play more PUBG.
Oh my God. You got out of bed. Oh, Rob.
You were hyped up or you were thinking about it in Ben? Like what precipitated the moment where I should, rather than like counting sheep or like counting PUBG shots in my head, you decided to get up and play more PUBG.
Yeah, I was thinking about it a little bit, and I was like, I'm gonna have a hard time sleeping. And I also just felt kind of this sense of incompleteness. Like, no, I have not had the PUBG experience that I know I could have tonight, and it's a holiday weekend, so I'll just play a quick one. And it basically
that's always your 50-minute match.
Yep. Yep, that match, I died in top three. That one wrapped up at, 2:30 in the morning.
Good.
And you can't go to sleep after that. At that point, I needed some turn-based strategy to wind down.
I saw you launch Battletech. I saw that tweet where you were like, I'm too keyed up. And then I literally saw you launch Battletech, and I went to screenshot it, but it was late, so my hands were moving too slowly. I couldn't get the screenshot.
Yeah, dude, basically shaking by the time that match ended. Like, the hyper-awareness is real.
I need to play more with you. Even just hearing the story gives me the itch. I really, really want to play more PUBG now. Do you hear the news today that PUBG Corp is suing Epic in Korea, alleging copyright infringement, this is from The Verge's story, against Epic Games and has filed a lawsuit in the Seoul Central District Court to determine whether Fortnite has copied PUBG. Quote, we filed the suit to protect our copyright in January, says an unnamed PUBG official in a statement to the Korea Times. I'm very curious to see how this shakes out. I don't know enough about Korean law and how it applies to games and IP law in general in Korea to know what chance they have, but they specifically called out things like the way consumables work and UI elements. So it's not just the general, who the fuck knows? I'm very curious.
This sounds more like a shot across the bow, like a sort of
But it costs money.
We probably can't contain, they have the money. Like the money, yeah, the money's true. Not a problem. Fair. Like, you know, just like having lawyers, dance in circles for, 6 months so you can send some press releases and pound your chest, like is a drop in the bucket relative to probably trying to head off with their, like, the larger problem or the larger worry. Like, calling it a problem is maybe ascribing too much credence to their argument.
Right.
Which I don't actually think they have. Like,
right, but that's the thing is, like, why not just put your head down and fucking keep working on your game? Like, I don't know what they gain from this unless they really genuinely think they have a chance of winning.
Maybe not Fortnite, but maybe you scare off other competitors from being like, you know, Fortnite's got power. Like, Epic Games is making $50 million a month off their mobile game, right? So it's like, yeah, you're not going to take down Epic, but might you, like, bat away like six other people who are thinking about trying, like, what does this mean? You know, I don't know what this means for Activision and Call of Duty. You know what I mean? Like, it gets weird fast. My initial take on it was just an eye roll and just, they know this was like a doomed thing. They just want the headlines. Like, this is just, you know, a pump in their chest. Like, they're not actually.
Yeah, I just don't think those headlines look good for us. You know what I mean? To even to fans of PUBG. But I do like that. I do think that the angle, you're right, the angle of like scaring off other mid tier, especially other Korean devs, makes some sense to me.
Desperate and sad. It's completely desperate and sad. Yeah. Like, it's in, like, you know, I don't know Brendan Green. Like, he is not a friend of the show nor a friend of mine. But, like, not hard to imagine that, like, this stuff is pretty divorced from.
The corporate
level stuff is a lot different than the dev. Like, I can't say that for sure. I don't know. But if you're thinking like the way to turn around PUBG, which is not even a game that needs to be turned around. Like, at this point, like, in a lot of ways, PUBG and Fortnite are separate entities on separate tracks that just have crossover from a design perspective. Like, I think, like, there's a lot of folks, like, people are PUBG or Fortnite people. Like, and there is crossover, but, like, you know, I'm, I, they're kind of like on, you know, going in their own directions at this point. But like the problems that like PUBG has are like solvable problems that like should have been fixed a long time ago. Like the performance issues, the cheating, the server problems, that is all stuff that is like scales much higher on Fortnite. And yet they, you know, not that game doesn't have its issues, but like they've largely got that contained. You know, there's no version of Fortnite where like there was in PUBG where you have people playing certain game types because there are fewer cheaters there.
Right.
Like, that's bad. Like, that's, like, you have the money and resources to make that work, and, like, scaling is hard. But, yeah, you know, like what you're saying, like, it's a bad fucking look when your response to having a game that has been dethroned after being, you know, sort of at the top of the heap for, like, the better part of a year is to, like, start throwing on lawsuits. Like, that's usually what you do from a position of weakness,
yes,
not a position
exactly,
of power.
Exactly.
That said, Epic is also suing the fuck out of a 14-year-old for cheating.
Yep.
So, you know, like, let's not pretend that
lawyers.
Epic also isn't being, like, super fucking weird and aggressive against, like, a kid that probably doesn't deserve it when they're trying to make a point.
I mean, that kid didn't make the cheats, right? That kid, this is just a kid who downloaded some cheats, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh. He was warned a bunch of times. There was actually a terrific... I don't know the reporter's last name. Sarah, she writes for The Verge. She did a big deep dive on Fortnite and this lawsuit in particular, which she, like, breaks down exactly, like, not only what happened, but, like a lot of the legal implications of, like, you know,
Sarah Jeong, who's always been a fantastic tech reporter. So
great, yeah, great. Like, just follow her on Twitter, and she's going to both point you to stuff that she writes and other stuff that's, like, extremely good. But she does a really great deep dive into this whole case, and you will see why Epic is doing what they're doing, but it will not make you feel good about any of it.
Right. Totally. So
anyway,
yeah. Sorry. Anyway, off the PUBG train, I can talk a little bit about some more stuff from Judges Week, as some embargoes have come down over the last couple of days. I don't want to stay too long on this stuff because it's mostly stuff that's been out there to some degree already, but I did want to check in and then we can maybe pivot from one of these and go to another one. So really briefly, last week I said my favorite thing I saw was Dreams, and that was a really great experience that I got into there, and I think other podcasts have covered now too, so I don't want to go back there. But I will say I saw some other stuff at Sony that I can talk about now. There were some VR titles there. I played Vacation Simulator, the follow-up to Job Simulator. And, you know, that was funny. It was a funny, good time. That game is going to be charming. It's going to be more of that.
Was super good to show VR to...
Totally.
Like people who have not used it before. It's because, like, there's no skill ceiling. It's just you fucking around.
Yep.
And it's funny. So I'm glad there's another one, if only to have, like, a new sort of demo to show other people.
It's really fun to prompt you to do shit. Do you know what I mean? It's really fun to be like, and unlike the first game, there seems to be some slightly more complex design stuff around, like, challenges and, like, try to do this thing, it'll unlock
stuff
this other thing.
Do.
Yes, a little more stuff to do, a little more objective, a few more objectives. You know, there was a beach party. It was fun. I played another VR game that I went into with very low expectations, and it ended up being one of my favorite things that week. Firewall Zero Hour, which is by the devs of Adrift. I forget what the name of that team is. So I want to say it's like 301 or something like that.
And to, like, further connect it back, like, the sort of, like, chief creative, I don't know his exact title, you know, Adam Orth.
Right.
You may scratch at the back of your head going, like, why do I, like, remember Adam Orth? Like, he was at the center of a controversy when he worked at Microsoft related to around the launch of the reveal of the Xbox One, when they were doing, like, the always on, like, online sort of stuff. And
right.
There was controversy. He made some comments about people that didn't. I don't want to mischaracterize what he said, but he said some controversial comments that, like, set a bunch of people off, and he, you know, a bunch of, like, disproportionate harassment went his way for as aggressive or maybe ill-spoken his own comments were. And then he went into sort of development after that. And Adrift, I believe, was, like, a sort of, like, metaphorical response to... Like,
oh, I didn't realize that.
I believe that is the case, where Adrift was, like, sort of a metaphorical response to, like, sort of, like, where he felt after that that experience. So, anyway, that brings us to him making a shooter in VR.
Right. And it turns out the shooter is super good. Like, I am not the person who would normally be like, oh, yeah, what I want to do is get the ridiculous-looking PlayStation Move gun controller, the one that shipped with the Fire. What was that? What's that other game? Fire.
Base? Wait, the one that was the space one?
The space
that was
one.
On Mars?
Yeah.
That came out a couple of Farpoint.
Farpoint.
Bad game.
Not yeah, I did not good. Enjoy that.
I played like 2 hours of that, really thinking, like, really trying. And, like, it's like a 4 hour game, and I didn't get to the end.
Right. Well, and in general, like, the last thing I ever want is, like, more VR shooters in that single player model where it's just like a shooting gallery. And I played some more of those last at Judges Week 2 that did not really leave me feeling good. There was one that had like some cool shit but didn't necessarily have like any sort of, it just didn't feel good. And they're just boring. They're just like, I want more from VR. But Firewall Zero Hour, which is the new game from the Adrift team, is a VR shooter that like really just worked for me. It's a multiplayer shooter. It's a competitive shooter. It's in the vein of something like Rainbow Six Siege or Counter-Strike. It's objective-based. I mean, there's a couple of modes. The one I played was very Counter-Strike. It was, you know, one team is planting bombs, or one team is defending bombs, the other team is disarming bombs. There are character abilities. You know, there are, like, this is why I kind of compare it to Siege. It's like, oh, this character can take extra shots, you know, not go down. This character can hold extra ammo, or this character can drop an ammo bag or whatever, right? And it just felt really fucking good. Like, it just, I did really well, and that is a rare thing for me, playing against other real people. Not just playing against other devs. It was not a devs throw the match thing. There were also some other human players, I believe. The devs aren't humans, you know what I'm saying. But it was like really tense. I felt really good leaning around corners and lining up shots. It has a direct movement thing that did not make me sick. I was obviously playing on the new model PSVR, the newer model PSVR, and on PS4 Pros, but like I didn't get sick, and I'm normally right on that line where like it at the very least will wind me. But I did like 3 straight matches. I played for like 25 minutes and was good. I could have played for another hour, you know? I really, really enjoyed it. And that's a game that when I first saw the trailer, I rolled my eyes. Like, they showed that trailer last year at the event, and I were like looking at you, Patrick, because we were at the Sony event, and I just like, why are they even fucking showing this? And I couldn't have been more wrong, and I'm happy to eat crow and say, like, hey, if you're looking for that sort of experience in VR, Firewall Zero Hour like really fucking delivered for me, which is an experience I didn't think I wanted. But, you know, I like shouting. I like teamwork. I like shouting about going around corners and like breaching doors. It gave me the same sort of vibe that I love about PUBG in terms of I talk a lot about games that let you tell stories, and like the geometry of the levels and the different tactics you can use and the different loadouts that you've brought all contribute to letting you say, I was right there and the door opened and I laid a claymore mine at his feet and blah, blah, blah. And like that stuff really worked so well for me. So again, Firewall Zero Hour, was a good one.
Is there a colon? Is it Firewall Zero Hour, like in Horizon Zero Dawn, which
yes.
does not have a colon? Yeah,
this one, ooh, wait, maybe it doesn't. I'm seeing 4 news stories.
I would say do not rely on the media has written this.
I'm going to go to blog.usplay.playstation.com, and that says no. That this from hello, I'm Adam Orth. This one does not have colons. So Firewall Zero Hour, no colons. It's cool. I would say check it out. I played it with that weird gun peripheral. You can also just play with a controller. And I bet that plays fine and probably is the best way to play it, honestly. But I might still play it with the Move controller because it's fun and goofy. So, and then last, I played Days Gone. Did you all both see Days Gone last year? Did either of you?
I have seen multiple demos of Days Gone at E3s, both in the public and private presentations, and I am predisposed for everything that game is trying to sell me, and they have been some of the worst demos I have ever seen at an E3 for, like, a big budget. Like, where these demos are, like, it's just, you know, spit polished. Like, it just... bad. And when I was on the Bombcast last week, I was hoping to pump Jeff for information because he said that he saw it, but he did not want to sit down. He didn't want to sit down and play it. He didn't want to wait. So
I saw him watching a lot of people play that game. I stood in line and sat down and played that game for that 20, 25 minute demo.
Yep.
What do you want to know? Tell me what you already know about this game, and then ask me some questions, both of you.
I liked the show. The Biker Stash was good on FX. I was a fan of that show for like 3 seasons before it got really, really, really bad. But I still watched it to the end because I have a problem. And the pitch of like Sons of Anarchy, like getting in a motorcycle, mm-hmm. going around a big world, running from zombies, and specifically making the zombies built around sort of like the core pitch of like the World War Z movie, which is that they are enormous hordes that can overwhelm you in the way that like films like don't necessarily always like portray, or media in general don't portray really well, like how a shambling horde might actually like overwhelm you. That all sounded all right. But just every time I saw it, it just didn't look good. This is a really like a not a, a specific sort of observation. It just didn't look good. Like it was just like did not. It seemed overambitious. It seemed that they weren't like meeting the ambition in the design. And like I guess like how does it play? How do the packs work? Like does
okay?
How
so
does all that stuff
the
connect
first
together?
The first thing the handler told me was, you know, there are these big hordes out
is
in the
that
world.
An NPC? The handler?
No, sorry, I meant the PR person who was telling me to sit down. I actually don't know what their role was in the game, but he was like, there are big hordes out there. There are these roving packs of zombies, but I'd advise staying away from those for the demo because they'll just kill you. They'll just kill you. So like, I didn't see any of those. They never. She was like, they'll pop up on your map, and I was like, all right, if they pop up on my map, I'm gonna go find them. They never.
I'm ready to die.
I'm ready to die because I want to see this is the thing that the game has, and it just never came up. At all. It is really drab, and I don't just mean aesthetically. I have not watched Sons of Anarchy, but I imagine that is a show with some larger than life characters. This guy is the, first of all, his name is like something St. John, Sad Boy St. John or something. Deacon St. John. And he's just the, like, you can tell he's supposed to be a character who's a badass, but he just doesn't sell it in any way. He doesn't look like a biker badass with a heart of gold. He looks like someone said that that's what they wanted to design and like started with their first draft, and it just, his voice, his delivery, his writing, like, it's all so rough. It's all so like C tier. First draft, like it's fine for that first draft, but and this game isn't coming out until next year. It isn't until 2019, so there's time, obviously, but like it felt like it needed more time, just in terms of characters and just in terms of like, hey, I met up some main characters, I met some friends of this guy, I met some people back at the base, and none of them are memorable in any way. And I don't have. You know, we will talk about Save Decay momentarily. I have a lot of room in my heart for very broad sketches that I can fill in the blanks with. None of it worked for me here. There's some stuff in the world that's kind of interesting in the same way that most post-apocalyptic stuff has, where it's like, all right, what is the story here? What happened to this world? And, you know, even in the first few missions I played, I caught some whiffs of like, you know, big medical military company, whatever, malpractice, you know, Rainbow Corporation style, or Umbrella, not Rainbow Corporation, Umbrella Corporation style shit, where it's like, oh, they were testing on so-and-so and blah, blah, blah happened. And all that stuff is like, kept my interest a little bit. But it was just, at every moment, it felt like the combat felt bad, the driving felt mediocre.
The stuff that in the demos that like came off really like in the first demo I saw 2 years ago, there was no UI, there was no real combat. Like it was a very stripped down, just the big pitch of our game is that you'll be on like a normal mission and that like you just don't know when these packs of zombies are gonna show
which
up.
Which isn't the pitch that they gave us at this event, which was like the hordes will be very clearly delineated and you won't have to worry about them unless you want to worry about them. And that is not the pitch, right? So the missions I went on were basically, there was one where it was like I had to go to a facility that was like kind of a laboratory, like a mobile laboratory, like in a trailer that was near a tunnel. And that one was like infested with zombies. And, you know, I killed a few with stealth kill. So I'm playing it literally as I've been playing Save Decay. And I think this is what I'm about to say is going to say something, but the combat feels way better in Save Decay 2 than in Days Gone, and I don't
Holy
think that,
shit.
Yeah, dog, yeah, it's like that. Like, it just feels so floaty, it feels so, I'm talking about Days Gone here.
Oh my god.
It feels floaty. None of the contact makes particularly physical or like it has any weight behind it. There's nothing really interesting on the resource side in the little bit that I played because I was able to just get resources so rapidly. And then there's another fight that was against human enemies where I used guns and it has kind of a Red Dead Redemption style mode of taking care, slowing down time so you can line up headshots and stuff like that. So, in the bits that I was never low on ammo and it was easy enough to loot more ammo or change weapons or blah, blah, blah. I was never in a place where it was where it would have felt advantageous to summon the Horde for them to deal with it instead of me, you know? So it was just, I don't know, there's nothing there for me right now. And that's on top of the fact that I feel like it is very much trying to do the Sony prestige style, right? It's trying to do the Naughty Dog house style or the now I guess the Sony Santa Monica, the God of War, Uncharted, the Last of Us, shot reverse shot, that style of dialogue, and none of it is up to par. And that's already a style that I don't love. You know, that's already not my vibe. Unpopular gaming opinion, welcome to Waypoint Radio. That's not a style that appeals to me. And so to see it executed on at a lower standard is just it's troubling. Well, I don't know what they're going
to
do.
Especially when the other stuff doesn't seem to sort of the idea of Sony investing in a big budget zombie game, trying to do something that's, Naughty Dog, God of War adjacent in terms of production and sort of polish, but then putting it more of the emphasis on systems and world dynamics. That's awesome. That's part of what Microsoft was going for with State of Decay was very clearly, but it seems like with State of Decay, that they knew what they went a certain route and they just kept building towards that route. And that route did not involve the very packaged storytelling.
They ejected on it entirely. There is nothing.
Right, they just said, we're just not going to do that. That's just not our game. Whereas with Days Gone, it seems a little more what if we tried to do both? And it seems to be, probably too early to say about the hordes and all that stuff.
I don't know how you give a demo.
The initial response.
I just don't know how you give a demo of this game without making sure I see one of those hordes.
The demo should end every time with you dying because of some dynamic instance where they come in, even if it's forced and arbitrary because the demo just is working on a timer. Where after 15 minutes,
we're gonna spawn
you're just
in
gonna
a horde.
Run into a horde. Because that was the original demo was a 10 minute on a desolate farm where there's just nothing going on. It's very calm, it's very, very peaceful. And then just hundreds of creatures descend. And it didn't show you what the actual game was going to be, but I was in terms of a slice of this is the big picture for the experience you're going to have. It's okay, in a busy populated genre of zombies,
right.
That's at least something you can hang your hat on. Be this is our angle. This is what's going to make our game different. And it just doesn't seem there's enough of that or that it's going to make it distinctive and I don't know. Came away with the same way as when I've seen it. It's just it feels like a C-tier game in, a pack of, whatever you think of the Uncharted and stuff like that. They're aiming for a very specific thing and doing it well, regardless of whether you like it or not.
Well, so one of the things, and we can pivot now, because I know, Rob, you and I diverge greatly in State of Decay 2, which is the other game that I've been playing a lot of. Or maybe we should take a quick break. Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back so we can actually dig into State of Decay 2 a little bit. We will be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, so what I was going to say before the break was one of the things with Days Gone versus State of Decay 2. And I've only played like 25 minutes. I watched a few other people play through their demo. So I've seen, you know, on top of the exclusive footage that Game Informer has, and on top of, you know, a few hours of this game now, right? All set. On top of the other demos I've watched. The thing that, that Days Gone wants to do is make you overcommit, bleed through resources, and then a horde can fuck you up. Because as far as I've seen, humans were not ever a real problem in combat. But the hordes clearly do outpace you. So when I see footage of that stuff, whether that's the original E3 thing or some of the footage that's come out from other outlets from you know, Game Informer had some exclusive horde-based stuff, the idea is like, okay, I have an objective. I have to get through that horde. But you're like never, in my experience, I was like never low on any equipment. I was never low on ammo. I was never low. I was always near a motorcycle. I could have always fled. Whereas the thing that happens to me in Save Decay 2, which works so well, is I often end up overcommitted, a little too ambitious for my own good, and too unwilling to back the fuck off and give up on an objective, and then it fucks me up. And that's one of the things I love about Save Decay 2. But Rob, it sounds like you are having a much different experience than I am.
Yeah, and I should preface this by saying I was super excited about State of Decay 2. Like, this is a game I was strongly predisposed to like, mm-hmm, in the face of any flaws I might encounter. This weekend, my partner kind of sort of requested I stop playing it.
Oh, boy.
Because it was just pissing me off, like, visibly.
Oh.
And I'm really surprised by how turned off this game makes me. Like, it feels a lot to me like they took everything that was, like, cool and refreshing about State of Decay 1. The world is always sort of active. The clock is always advancing. You know, your needs continue to evolve and shift. You have to manage your colony. All that stuff that, you know, the sort of hustle you have to maintain to keep your survivor's colony alive and thriving, while also preventing the outside world from just getting completely zombie infested to the point you just get overwhelmed. All of that has been, like, cranked up for the sequel. And it's all hit a point where, like, A, I find the systems are now just kind of pissing me off rather than evoking any kind of interest or excitement for me. And B, they are now relying on so much of, like, procedural narrative design to carry these characters that I have no investment in anyone in this world, including starting characters. Like, everybody is just a cipher with random character traits assigned that will never be expressed in any meaningful sense. And so the experience of playing this game for me is, it is a, well, Sisyphean task would be the way to put it, but it is very much like you're trying to fill up a bucket with a hole in the bottom.
Mm.
And except
that's
the bucket,
I think that's a really good metaphor. Yeah.
Except the bucket is also sending you lots of follow-up emails about why isn't it full yet? And, you know, hey, are you gonna take care of this? What's the status on that medicine transfer? Just letting you know, we're still here, still need help, still need... Like, it is this nonstop, like, requests from randos that you're getting while playing that game while the rest of the world continues to have shit happening in it. And then your own survivors, your own colonists, who are supposed to, like, in the first game, I remember them having exchanges and, like, feeling like there were real relationships within your survivors camp. And now it's just, like, random fucking anecdotes to nowhere. They're the most boring, group of people.
So
sort of thrown together.
You should go back and replay that first game, because it doesn't, outside of the author characters, which it had that this does not have, which were like Marcus, your other starting dude, and then the
Lily yeah, Gunner,
who was
yeah.
in this game, and then the soldier. Grace, I want to say maybe her name was
Maya.
It was Maya. Grace is the name of the soldier that I got in this. Maya. That's a game that had no author characters, and none of those other people did have meaningful conversations. Like, it But those four were definitely an anchor if that's what you needed.
And that is, it turns out, what totally. I need. Like, I do not need much to create a sense of the world being, like, real and having real stakes, but I need something. Like, my starting characters are brother and sister, Christian and Olivia, and they're estranged siblings. And the tutorial, they even refer, they have, like,
totally.
Two pieces of dialogue referring to their shared history.
That tutorial is, like, I think it sets the wrong expectations, and it's why my favorite group is the one that I made after the tutorial. Like, I think a lot about this game in terms of strategy games, and the best thing I could have done, and I wish the game encouraged you to do this, was to start over with a completely random slate of characters. I still have that main game going, which has the kind of on again, off again lovers. But my favorite game is the one that's three completely random characters where I get to see all their traits ahead of time and kind of build from the jump my own story, because it put me in that mode immediately. But I'll say more fundamentally, the thing I love about this game is the bucket with a hole in it feeling. It's also what I love about the other Microsoft game this year, Sea of Thieves, which is the feeling that, it pushes it over the ledge a little bit. The thing I love about Sea of Thieves is something is going wrong, and I need to try to figure out how to fix it. The thing that I love about Save Decay 2 is the lesson is you cannot help everybody. You cannot attend to everybody who needs help. What you can do is decide and prioritize who is the group that you care the most about, and who are the groups that you want to build affinity with. Sometimes that makes me a fucking coward, because I'm going to choose, when you say, like, okay, there's this group of lushes who are trying to build a still so they can make alcohol, and there's this group of ex-soldiers, which one do you not want to piss off? It's going to be the ex-soldiers. And that just does a lot for me when it comes down to me choosing which group or which directions I want to play, and in terms of just keeping me involved in that way. I also think that the bucket metaphor works for me to some other degree, which is I think that there's also a way in which you can think of that game as a narrative is filling up that bucket. And there are two faucets. There is the faucet the game is going to open, which is the one in which it has those anecdotes about playing basketball before the thing fell apart, or I have a carjacker on my crew right now, and it's like, she has different stories than everybody else. I actually definitely got a character, Rob, that is voiced by someone who is not the voice actress of Glitch in Battletech, but character is very similar in that she is, like, a little too smarmy for her own good, and a little too, like, she's having too much fun out here. I don't know what's going on, but she is really enjoying this shit. And I actually really like that character. But the other faucet is the stuff that the game is not giving you. I mean, to be clear, there are other things that the game does give you, right? So, like, yesterday I did a mission with my sheriff, who is the leader on this one of my two main games, whose job was to go... there'd been a murder. There'd been a murder at another group. I went there, and they were like, okay, we're pretty sure this one person did it. Can you go get her? And we went and to get her, and they said, I ran into the person who was accused of murder, and she was like, no, I swear I didn't do this. You can help me find the gun that they think I used, and if I can find that gun, because I stashed it somewhere else, it'll prove I didn't do it. Find the gun, return it to the group, and it turns out that the other person had done the murder and freaked out, and we had to have a fight with him, right? And, like, so there are bits of story. There's dialogue all through that stuff, obviously, right? So there are bits of story. But the more important faucet is that second faucet, which is the one that you bring, which is the one in which I roll my eyes when the shitty CEO says that we need more order around here. And, you know, he's a shitty CEO only because he has the trait former CEO. And he isn't saying, oh, you know, the way I run things in my old corporation, I was always the executive who gave a command. But I love filling in that gap so much. And I wish this game, I wish games in general, I wish non-interactive fiction games were better at training players how to do that, because they're very good at teaching us how to evaluate space to like figure out how to, like, I think about games like The Division or Gears of War or XCOM, where it's like, okay, I can look at a space and figure out what places are safe and what places are dangerous. But most video games are not particularly good at teaching you how to turn on that second faucet. And the best ones, or the ones that do, are mostly good at kind of opening the faucet for you. And I think this game probably could have, or definitely could have, opened the faucet more for you in the way that the first game did here or there.
I don't buy that it's like, oh, the game just needs to teach you to, you know, sort of bring your own fun and bring your own investment and like read context and meaning into these interactions. These interactions are so nakedly probabilistic based on these random traits, and there are so many of them that are misfiring all the time, or they're firing so rapidly that they pass without any of them really sinking in, that there is no, if I invest something of myself in like creating the story of my colony, my group of survivors, the game is not going to grab my hand and help me support that. The game is going to drop that repeatedly.
But that hasn't happened for me. This is where I push back, is like, I've had that experience where it works for me. When I talked to Kevin, who just wrote that great piece for us on disability in Frostpunk, he's having that experience with State of Decay, and he's filling in the gaps, and it is working. Another friend of mine has been playing it and posting updates on her Twitter feed and like telling these stories. So while I definitely understand that you're not having that experience with it, the thing that I want to get to is, how do we then account for the fact that all these other people are having that experience? And for me, it's not to say that you're wrong or something. I don't think, you know, I love lots of games lots of people don't like, and I genuinely believe those other people are right not to like them. It's why I don't recommend them. It's why, like, I always have a caveat when I say Dragon's Dogma is one of my favorite games, because it probably won't be yours if you're listening. You know what I mean? So this is one of those for me. This is one of those games that I'm really enjoying, and what I tense up against is the notion that somehow me bringing the fun to it is not an accurate way to play, or is not a viable way to play. I don't think it's representative, you know, but I don't think that that's a problem, if that makes sense. I mean, you know how I play Stellaris. You know how I play games. It's just the way I play things. And those, if it brings something out of those games that other people don't have, for me, part of the thing is like, how do I help people have that sort of fun with these games? We play XCOM together every week, and we bring something to that game that game doesn't fucking support Valravn, fucking Son of Odin. You know what I mean? We built that off of seeing some ravens on a rooftop and him getting three straight shotgun hits. And so, like, that is how I play games. For me, the problem with State of Decay is that it had the opportunity to make more people see ravens on the roof and say, that guy's the fucking Son of Odin. And it didn't teach them that. And that is where I think I hold something against it, because it was in a position, for the price point that it's at, and for the fact that it's putting so much on its probabilistic storytelling, that it should have at least put the fucking pen in your hand to encourage that stuff. So I don't know. That is definitely how I'm feeling right now.
Yeah. Like I would have liked if there were ravens on the rooftop. Like, for me, these things begin to break at moments. Like the other day, I'm responding to yet another group in the valley that's like, hey, we need medicine. Still need medicine. Uh-huh. Any, we got any medicine? We're pretty hard up here. So finally I'm like, all right, we've taken out some plague hearts. We've cleared some infestations.
Your A priorities are dealt with. You kind of have, like, you've spun the most important plates.
Yeah. And by the way, it does not feel like these people have been around here long. Like, literally, the drip feed of new pressures put on you is very, very fast. So, like, literally in playing time, the first time these people put in a request for medicine was probably like 20 minutes ago.
Right. Maybe. Which is not even an in-game day.
Right. It's very short. So I load up the car with medicine, drive out to their camp. As I am driving up the driveway, like, literally my car is pulling up to their garage.
Right.
I get the, well, fine, I guess, guess you guys are just going to let us die, huh? Well, we'll see how it is when the shoe's on the other foot. And so I get out of the car.
I'm right fucking here. Yeah.
Yeah. I get out of the car with my medicine, and they open fucking fire on me.
Yep. If they're hostile, they will just go hard immediately.
Yeah. And so, you know, I gun them down. It's whatever. They go down pretty easy. But at that point, it's like, I have no idea who they were. Like, literally, right. This was my first and only interaction with them, I think, was them basically whining about medicine for like 20 minutes on top of all the other radio messages I was getting. And then as I'm pulling up, they're like, you know, death to you for not bringing us that medicine that you're carrying. Like, right. And that is not a unique story. Yep. That has happened. Something similar to that has happened multiple times in my time with the game. And I think there's another aspect of this, which is, what's the way to put this? Certainly like when I was freelancing, but also just like this whole game feels like when you completely lost control of your email inbox and there are too many people who need too many things from you every day. And you know, like that part of you that eventually just starts like having this reflexive, visceral, like, just give me a fucking minute. Just can you back off and give me 20 fucking minutes to like, you know, swallow a sip of coffee and eat a goddamn bagel. This game...
Trust me, I know that feeling.
This game is that feeling distilled. Like, and this is why my partner was like, maybe you should stop playing this. Like, it is... like, you clearly hate this game. Because I was tensing up while I was playing it. The dynamics of this game and the way it functions. It is like opening a hellmouth into a world of just unending need from people you do not know and do not particularly like and owe nothing to, and yet who will be endlessly passive aggressive.
Have you thought about being an evil person in this game?
What?
I really want the Rob Zachney bandit lord version.
Maybe that's how I salvage this game. Maybe like,
yeah, have you thought about promoting a warlord and just saying fuck it?
No, I promoted a fucking sheriff, and so no, like I'm
sheriffs,
fucking
the whole thing with sheriffs literally is all of their shit is all of their missions literally are we're out here to help these randos, and literally the other people in your base, every time you get a mission, they're like, we should be dealing with ourselves, fuck these randos, you should go kill that person and promote a warlord and come back to me next week and just start being, instead of showing up with the medicine, you show up with a gun.
Yeah, I'll give it a try. The other thing I will say, the combat is super weightless. Like, in terms of the way the game plays, it does not feel substantially improved upon the first game.
No, I think it's, like, the same combat model as the first. Like, the Alan Wake-ish hit the B button to do a little, like, duck-down dodge to dodge out of things. I'm hitting, like, the same button combos I did the first game.
And is there anything more futile feeling than, like, when you're standing, like, your foot is caught on a piece of fence post geometry, and you are just, like, a tenth of a degree off from the thing that would hit the zombie, so you're repeatedly swinging through
in the air, or the zombie. It's really bad around doorways. It's so bad at doorways.
Good thing you don't
go
into houses all the fucking times. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think a lot of the stuff that you... I like the upgraded stuff a lot. I love the, like, leg sweep to ground kill thing. There are some good opportunities for, like, quick kills once you develop out some of your moves, but you know, I don't, that is not the appeal for this game. And if that's what you want, like, I think going, like, it's just never going to feel as good as Last of Us combat is, you know?
Yeah.
They're better.
I don't know. I'm in a weird place. There. Like, for me, I would say, like, I would still probably turn people on to State of Decay 1 over this one, because I think it has a better on ramp. And I think there's more authored content in that.
I think it's just so much worse.
Feeling invested in the world.
Yeah, it definitely has way more authored content. But I will say, I just think it's so much worse at the base management stuff, at foregrounding and explaining why your morale is bad. At the base building stuff is so much more interesting here at the high level. There's so many more difficult choices that I'm making than in State. In Save Decay 1, I became self-sufficient within the first, like, 6 or 7 hours. I moved to the best base, and then I was fine forever, and I never made another interesting choice. Now I'm constantly like, oh, do I want to take down my solar panels and instead invest in a work? Like, the fact that I don't have a workshop right now is fucking killing me. I moved my main group into a police station because it had the ability to craft ammo without needing a workshop, and I was like, awesome. But the ammo it crafts is only police ammo. It has like 9mm Magnum and shotgun rounds, but my best guns use rifle rounds. It's like a PUBG situation where it's like, yeah, I have all the fucking 9mm I could ask for, but no 5.56. And that has been really, because now my whole big project is like, all right, I'm saving up influence and I'm getting my materials ready to move into a base where I can actually have a proper workshop and take advantage of this other stuff. But then there's stuff that I have for free at the police station that I won't have at either of the other bigger bases on the map that I'm on.
And that's only thing I'm still invested in this game is there's one campsite that I've really got my eye on.
Is it the one in like the southwest? It's like Camp Kahula or something like that.
Yeah, it's got a fucking well and a giant kitchen and tons of beds and like the last people who held it got eaten, but that's not gonna happen to me.
No, definitely not. You need two things, I think, to enjoy this game, Rob. One, you need a warlord. Two, you need me just improvising. They could ship me with this game. I think it would be a better game.
But I think that is the problem. Is this game is like, it would be a good game master's tool set, but there's nothing in the game that plays the part of the game master. And it just needed that little bit of, I don't know, just, I don't know if it needs just a little more authored content or just slightly more maybe like bespoke event chains and interactions. I think
it also needs to like see that you're fucking driving up with the medicine. That shouldn't happen. Like I'm not blind to that. You know what I mean? Like if you're driving up with the medicine, they should be like, hey, I guess you're not coming. And your character should be like, oh no, we're right here. Just record that. Just record every one of those people saying, oh, we'll be right there. And being able to like actually respond in that way in some way would be great, you know? I'm really curious about it as a platform. The fact that it's part of Game Pass means that it will have its own fair share of opening players in the same way that Sea of Thieves did. So I'm really curious to see how they support it in the coming weeks and months. But you know, this is the reception I expected it to get, all said. I didn't expect this game to review well because I've played it a couple of times and knew that it didn't feel as good as most third-person shooters or action games did, and knew that it wasn't, like, once they said there are not the Marcus and Maya equivalents in this game, it's like, oh, okay, it's all proc-gen characters, it's all proc-gen relationships with other stuff. This is dope for me, but I definitely suspect that in the long run they will have wished that they had those character analogs for sure. Patrick, you've been quiet. You're about the same way as Rob here, right?
Yeah, I'm more Rob than you. I've wanted to like this game a lot. I gave it about 5 hours and have not gotten over like the initial hump, which like I mentioned this when I talked about it with Brad on the Bombcast, but that like, you know, part of it like pushes against like the nature of how you play other like more forgiving authored story oriented games. But like I also play like difficult, challenging, like unforgiving games. So it's not, you know, it's not something where I'm just running into like, you know, expecting an easy experience. But I find the onboarding to be just like unbelievably poor. Mm-hmm. And like in the first couple of hours, just generally having like no idea what I'm supposed to be doing and like realizing like from a design perspective that it's like meant to make you feel stressed and like, but the stress I'm experiencing is not stress where like, haha, I got tough decisions to make. It's like, yo, like you just really haven't like actually made me understand what like a lot of like the stuff is. I get the general loop, like, oh, find resources, bring them back. But it's like immediately you get your base and it's like, here are like 6 different things you can build. Like why? Like which one should I build? Like, oh, I'm opening my map with like a bunch of like trees I can pick from that like are showing where all that stuff can go. Like, okay, but like what's important? Like I needed a little bit more. And
I
played it early and it's a game that if I had, yeah, it's one of those games where like I wanted to read an article. It was like 10 things you should know about State of Decay 2 before you start playing. And rather than what I did was like play 5 hours of it, like get to the end and go like, I'd kind of rather just play like a shitty David Cage game because at least I know what I'm getting into. like it just in the sense that like I can wrap my head around it and like think about it and like engage with it in a way that I understand. And I would like to get over that hump of Save Decay so I can dislike it on the terms more that Rob is speaking to, as opposed to the terms that I'm currently on with it, which is just like I'm just sort of frustrated and like haven't found what should be engaging about it, even though intellectually it's like should be something that I find fascinating, but I'm just not there yet, or at least haven't gotten over that hump where I can just declare like, okay, actually this really just isn't for me, which is fine.
It's one of those things that's interesting because I think I'm thinking a lot about Rob's suggestion to go back and play the first one. And it's interesting because there's almost like multiple types of tutorialization. On one hand, I don't think that that game is any bad. I think it's way worse at which upgrades should I build, because it's way worse at kind of highlighting what you need and why you need it in terms of like the stat screen. But having that anchor of characters you know are important characters, and having a much more authored beginning than Save Decay 2 does, especially if you're not using the kind of tutorial intro where you go through the same base with the two characters and blah, blah, blah. Like, that might be enough to grab and like to make you push through some of the vagueness, not you specifically, but the kind of broader you, where it's like, okay, I'm grounded by the fact that Marcus is my character who I do lots of looting with, and Maya is my really good combat character, and I can just focus on them for now and deal with base shit as it comes.
My ideal, having played through it and the frustrations I run into, I sort of wish like the way it was structured was like you had something like very handholdy to get you through like the core loop of the game for like 2 or 3 hours, and then you just lose fucking everyone.
Right, that's exactly it.
There should be an event that just wipes you out. Yeah. Like you start off at, like you start in a small map that is just like, this is just here to give you some idea. All your characters die, yeah. You lose everything, or maybe one of you wakes, you know, your main character wakes up somewhere else. You get kidnapped, right, I don't know, right. Like whatever. But it's like, there's a real structure to like, okay, this, we're gonna get you through, we're gonna help with like, this whole like, help you find some of the fun that this game has, but in like a safer environment. And then eventually we're going to pull the rug out and you're either in or you're out,
but
you're not going to be in a situation where like you don't feel like you're prepared for the generally how you're supposed to approach the game. I think this game far too quickly gets to the, yo, like we're pulling out, like here's a giant map, which like for someone that's plays State of Decay, like yourself and even Rob to some extent, like you look at that and like you have a framework.
Right.
And it's like, I've played a lot of, like, the fucking games that fit into a framework adjacent, but, like, it's something wrong when I come into this and go, like, I'm just feeling frustrated and I don't...
Yeah, no.
I don't know where to... I don't know what to do next. I'm just kind of, like, throwing up my hands. Like, should I be back in the base? Like, I just don't fucking... It's not a stress because I don't have enough resources. It's a stress because I just don't even know what the game is asking.
Right. Well, like you look at the open world map with the towers to climb and look at things, right? Like there are billboards and stuff like that and cell phone towers that you can climb to kind of look down and mark stuff on your map. Here's a hot tip. You can also do that if you find one of the Google cars in this game and just drive around in it. It will map stuff for you automatically.
Well, that's kind of awesome.
It's a neat little thing. And you'll see they have like the big Google camera shit on the top. But the loop is so unlike games that have like it's not the Ubisoft formula where you're like, oh, first I'll go here and then I'll go here and do the quests in this zone and then I'll go to this zone. Like it is not an Assassin's Creed game in that way, but it does not tell you it's not one of those. I know that because I played the first game and did the loop from going from house one to house two, from house two to house three. And that's how I moved through the map and like upgraded my shit along the way and kind of looted everything around in the first area or like learned to, especially now with the plague hearts where it's like, no, you sometimes have to go really far away on the map. And really bring a lot of shit to go take care of one of those plague hearts and then hope that you have enough to get back safe. And it does not, it definitely, if you don't have that State of Decay 1 experience of like, that is the map I'm looking at. This is not, I'm not going to find the quest giver in each zone, you know, then it's really hard to onboard yourself to that. All right. I'm going to probably stream this one more time. I've done two streams of Save Decay in the last week or so that are probably worth watching. I ended up with a very goofy fucking team of college. Again, this game did not make them college friends, but me in the chat absolutely made them college friends. It's like a philosophy major who named himself Socrates. That's literally what his nickname is. A poli-sci major who became like a political canvasser who gets bonuses to talking to other survivors, and then a theater major, and they are just all the fucking worst. And like literally like we got very lucky with the person who had the philosophy major trait, literally has like the snarkiest, shittiest, like meanest dialogue. And so that stuff has been very good. You can find those over on Twitch. I don't think either of them, maybe the first one is up on YouTube. But there's been a second one, and that one is on Twitch at the very least. So check those out. Y'all ready to dip briefly into the question bucket?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. If you have a question, you can send it into gaming@vice.com with the subject question. This one comes in from a concerned fan. Hi, Waypoint crew. Last night I had a dream that I was attending a party at your offices. At some point in the dream, someone installed up or initiated a party game where we broke off into teams of two and had to pick a card with a random phrase on it that best described Danica. I was in a team with developer Christine Love, who insisted that we use the card labeled Everybody's Mom. I, on the other hand, was adamant that we play a card labeled Linkin Park. What does this mean? Please help. Link Everybody's Mom versus Linkin Park. I feel like this is a McDonald's triangle. On one end is Everybody's Mom, on the other is Linkin Park. I don't know what the third one is. It's a good dream.
This is inscrutable.
I think that it means that you don't know what our offices are like very much. all right. Thank you, with a concerned fan. I think just keep dreaming.
I'm concerned for this fan.
For this fan. Like, yes.
I'm gonna flip that
a concerning
around.
Fan.
Please keep writing in about your dreams.
Oh, yeah, please, 100%. Please. All right. This one is a little more real. This one comes in from Jeff J. And actually ties into some of our State of Decay stuff, but also, hey, Dark Souls Remastered just came out, and I already know Patrick's answer to this a little bit. So hey, Waypointers. I was wondering if y'all consistently make the same character in games with creative character modes. I don't mean making essentially yourself, which I'm sure everyone has done now and again, but actually making a consistent character between games. I ask because back when Rock Band first came out, I used the character customizer to make myself a female bassist, Jean. She's a tan-skinned brunette with lots of tattoos and a preference for light blue and crimson color schemes. Since then, I've used her as an avatar in several other games, and they have become part of my mental lore of her life. She grew up in the industrial side of town in Los Santos, where she became a heavily tattooed biker girl, GTA 5's online mode. She eventually learned to play bass and joined a band, All Rock Band games, before returning to her criminal roots and becoming the head of the Saints Row the Third. Anytime she shows up at a fantastic or science fiction-y world, I imagine she's playing a tabletop RPG with friends or daydreaming about a movie series, as in The Elder Scrolls or KOTOR, for instance. Am I alone in this, or do any of you do it? Thanks for the show. Keep up the great work. Jeff J., Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I as someone that doesn't find this as particularly creative at coming up with characters, that kind of just stuck with... I just plucked Odetta from the Dark Tower series, and she has just become like my personal avatar in, like, largely in the Souls games. But Odetta will also make appearances in other games, but like, it's specifically in the Souls games. She has aged from game to game, which doesn't necessarily fit like the timeline canon of the games, and that means she also crosses over into Bloodborne. But nonetheless, like, Odetta finds herself in a general, like, a similar character. It kind of fits the kind of character that, like, I want to play in those games too. Like, some kind of doesn't give any shit and kind of pushes back even as your character is quiet. Yeah, that's my approach. And I'm going to say that as I go and answer my door, and then I'll be back in a second. So continue.
Okay. Rob, how about you? Do you ever have
No, my characters don't jump franchises. Like, they're pretty, like, not every character I create is going to be me. Like there are some games I just feel moved to go in a completely different direction with my main character, but they all tend to like excluding games that are part of series, they all tend to sort of be confined to their worlds. Cause I kind of like it that way. Cause for me that builds out the world a little bit more.
Right. The only games that I do this in are games that you could imagine touching each other in terms of vibe, and really only one vibe, which is the Animal Crossing, Harvest Moon, Stardew Valley, Magician's Quest, Starbound even. Anything where it's like, oh, I'm just kind of a regular person doing some exploration and meeting friends and building a farm or a house. And I always play as Argyle, a character named Argyle, named after the Die Hard character who always has purple hair and big glasses and is like my tweeest self. So that is the only game where I really, the only kind of character who jumps with me from game to game. I guess I probably, when I was younger, I had something similar. Or, you know what, sometimes I'll have a character who shows up in multiple things, but is something, like, I definitely spent, when I was in college, I made a ton, I made all of the tabletop characters in my Legend of the Five Rings games whenever I was playing, like, a Romance of the Three Kingdoms game, right? They would all make it into that. Or when I was playing a Samurai Warriors or a Dynasty Warriors game with Create a Character. Like, and I still do that to some degree. When I play Darkest Dungeon, you bet that a lot of tabletop characters wind up in there. Or we did the XCOM stream where you saw some tabletop characters show up in our first XCOM 2 War of the Chosen stream before we started our new playthrough. So, like, that happens. But by and large, I don't. If I make a character for a setting, if I, like, make, for instance, I have a Skyrim character who is, like, an elven princess who got, you know, waylaid on her way through Skyrim, like, that character stays there. I'm not also going to play that character in Dark Souls or something like that, you know?
I do. I also plucking from the Dark Tower, I name all pets in all games Oi, after my beautiful boy Oi from... That travels around with them in the Dark Tower.
Yes, yes. Wait, was that your... Did you make Oi for Dragon's Dogma?
Yeah, so it also means I applied it to my... what are they... I forget what they call them.
Your pawn.
Pawn, yeah. Which felt like the equivalent of, like, your, like, a servant dog that is, like, following you around. So, yeah, my favorite was, like, Big Buff Oi, who, like, followed me around in Dragon's Dogma.
It was, like, your warrior.
Like, the complete... complete opposite of, like, this doofus little dog that follows them around in the Dark Tower. Like, that was probably my favorite incarnation of Oi. He is somewhere out there. Maybe on my Twitter timeline from years ago.
That's very funny.
But yeah, that is probably the best version of Oi I have.
That's very good. All right, one more. From Galen in Alaska, they say, "Hi, Waypoint crew. Hearing all the talk about Stalker lately from Rob has really made me want to jump in and play it. I've had it in my library for a long time, but have always been held back from jumping in by the choice of which mods to install before playing. It seems like there are two schools of thought on this. Do you want an experience as close to the original as possible, with only fixes like the ZRP mod, or do you want something that has been modernized to look better, be more immersive, etc., at the expense of some of the things that made the game unique? Like the complete mod. I have struggled with this before in games like Doom 3, where later editions allowed you to have a flashlight and a gun at the same time, which might be a nice convenience, but takes away from what made the original so tense and anxiety-inducing. Or in the Resident Evil remake, where they give you the option of the original tank controls or a more standard set. One option may be more modern, while the other might be more true to the original feeling of playing the game. My question is, when playing older games, which way does the Waypoint team tend to lean when faced with these choices? Modern convenience / graphics or close to original experience as possible? Also, Rob, please help end my analysis paralysis and tell me which mods to install to get the definitive Stalker experience. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Galen from Alaska." It's tough. This is a tough one. I have the same.
Well, I guess let's finish. Like, I remember when I played a couple hours of Stalker, and I believe, it was the complete mod was what all I installed when I did it. But I don't know if, like, the thinking.
So there's a couple things. The complete mod makes the game look great. Like, it brings up to, like, Clear Sky and Call of Pripyat standards. They introduced a lot more, I think they were DirectX 10, 11 effects for those games, so there's a lot more. They're just better. They're better looking games. They're better lit. And Stalker Complete kind of introduced a lot of that stuff, or at least faked it well enough that it would sort of pass for that. But it did sort of make the game a lot more manageable, a little more forgiving, or a lot of quality of life things. That said, the first time I played Stalker was Stalker Complete, and that's sort of the experience I fell in love with. Going back to it today, as I understand it, Stalker Complete has kind of fallen into a bit of neglect, so it's just not it's not as up to date. And I think there might have been some new issues that have opened up with it that have not really been solved. That's the word, at least in some threads I found. But here's the problem with Zone Reclamation Project: it's actually sort of an omnibus mod. At this point, with a lot of additional sub-options that you can toggle on within it. And so even if you're running ZRP, you still have this really extensive menu of changes and tweaks and quality of life things that you can adjust within ZRP. And all of them are to some degree like not, you know, canon Stalker, but they're there and they're part of the mod. And I think you will slowly lose your mind trying to deal with it. The only thing that is that you have to have, you can do this through the console commands or enable something within the mod. You got to fix that head bob. Like, I have never, like, almost, like, shooters do not make me sick. VR barely ever makes me sick. Within, like, 5 minutes of playing, like, Vanilla Stalker with ZRP, like, I was just, my head was throbbing. Like, I felt awful. It is the worst head bob I've ever seen. So you gotta fix that. But, yeah, play go ZRP, I think, these days.
Huh, okay. That helps me as someone who wants to play that game soonish, too. I don't know. I'm kind of torn on this one. I definitely have gone both ways.
It's especially when you haven't played the game before. Like, it's a question of like, are those quality of life things the difference between you getting some semblance of understanding why people enjoyed that game to begin with and never getting over the hump, right? So it's like, sure, like if it's a less pure version of the game, but like, if you're coming to a game 10 years later, you've already, like, your own internalized knowledge for how games have changed, has ruined your ability to experience that game in its pure form to start. And so, on some level, it becomes sort of a balance between, like, are you there to experience it as it was, or are you there to experience it in a form that you could find enjoyment in and scrape out some part of that experience that, like, allows you to better sort of like understand what people were talking about. And so I tend to lean on the latter. Like I'm not a huge purist in that regard. And like, if I'm going into something like, I usually ask people, like, that's usually what I am doing. It's like, hey, like I'm going back to revisit something like what feels safe to kind of like, you know, edge off, or smooth out in order to make sure that like I can get into it and have a good time. And won't sort of like fundamentally disarm what was interesting about it in the first place. And like, there's usually, thanks to, I mean, mostly on the PC, I guess, like there's like a nice set of, you know, usually mods where you can find a balance between the two of those. But yeah, I consider nothing to be sort of like
sacred or like,
No, like, or like it's, I've had experiences where I've gone back to games, originally played them with mods, and then you can also just start stripping that stuff out, right? So it's like, if you find like, oh, like I'm into this.
I
actually am more interested in the pure experience. Like, it's easier to work backwards than it is to go forwards. Than if, you know, if you sour,
if you hit
on
a
it,
wall,
if you
right.
can't, right? If you get you hit a wall, then like, oh, you know, this made the map a little more intuitive. Like, I'm not sure that's going to be the thing that like gets you into the game. But if you realize like, ah, shit, like this is actually, I want something a little more intense, or you know, whatever the case may be for how those changes are happening. Like, just a quick aside, like related to that. You know, I'm playing through some of the older Mega Man games on the Switch. There's a collection that's been out on other platforms, and that's coming out on the Switch. It came out last week, I believe, or it's coming out this week. I don't know the exact date, but it's soon, or now, or something. And on 1 through 6, they have something called a rewind feature, which means you just hold down a button on one of the shoulders, and it rewinds the game in real time, going back a couple of minutes, at least. And it is tremendous for someone that, like Mega Man 1, especially, is just a fucking unforgiving game. It is not like hard fun. It is just hard, because they hadn't quite found the balance that they started to achieve in 2 and beyond. And so like playing through like 1 and fighting the, I can't remember what the boss is called. He's like he's the one with the big yellow giant yellow golem. I can't remember what it's called, but it's the big yellow guy with one eye. And like that fight is not fun. But like what made it like reasonable was like for me to just hold down like that rewind button, like even going halfway through the battle. And like I still got to make the jumps, like I still got to make the shots, but it like allowed me to get through that game in about an hour and change and like have a fully satisfying Mega Man experience. Like I made it through the game like of my own free like skill. It's just that like I just allowed myself like essentially like a version of like a quick save and a quick load that skirted around things like lives and stuff like that. And that felt like I had a very satisfying experience, but could be considered one of those things that like, well, that technically changes how they built Mega Man, but it's like, ah, fuck it. Like it didn't make like, it didn't stop me from like having to find the patterns and jump through them. It just allowed me to short circuit, you know, some of the time to reattempt it.
I'll also say that there's nothing wrong with like going through and doing the opposite thing that you just suggested before, which is like seeing what that base experience is, but only as a recon thing. Like, be real honest with yourself. Be like, all right, I'm going to play 2 hours of this game the way it shipped, or like as close to as it shipped as I can, and then I'm just going to fuck it up with mods. I wish I still had the time to get into the mod scene, because one of my favorite things to do when playing games like New Vegas, or Skyrim, or I'm trying to think of other games that I spent a lot of time modding. If I opened up Steam, I would find a bunch. But like, you know, going to the Nexus or going onto the Steam workshop and just like finding a bunch of shit and just transforming a game until it is barely the thing it once was is a very fun thing. And understanding that as a separate thing can be really rewarding. And I think maybe one of the big things to resist there is the idea that you need to have played the thing for it to have been a good time. Does that make sense? Like, mm-hmm. It's okay to have played something else entirely, to have played a version of Fallout New Vegas where you have what is basically a robot suit that has like a sprint mod added, and where you're giving yourself even more weird cybernetic enhancements and, you know, companions who 100% did not exist. I played through Skyrim. I put like, you know, 15-20 hours in a game once where I had as my home base this kind of empty museum that I was slowly filling up, and was basically playing the Animal Crossing give stuff to Blathers version of that game. You know, where in Animal Crossing, the whole thing is like, you know, the whole thing, but one of the things you do is collect one of every animal and just like turn it into Blathers the Owl. I was doing that, but in Skyrim and with everything, every type of armor ever. I was just like, I have to build the perfect collection. I gotta catch them all. And that was a surprisingly really fucking rewarding way to play that game, because I was playing, you know, I was doing the Daedra quests, but like not to get good shit for me, just to make sure it's like, hey, that belongs in a museum, and I'm the one who runs the museum. And like, it's totally fine to find versions of a game like that for yourself to play, and just like have that fun and not worry about kind of checking something off of your list as the true version. As hard as it can be to give up on that desire, I know. All right, let's talk about waypoints. What are your waypoints for the week, Patrick and Rob? Is there anything you want to shout out? Anything you've been watching, playing, reading, listening to, etc.?
I have a request.
Yeah.
My waypoint is I need help.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, so I own a home. You know, you have things happen for the first time. We got a text message from one of our neighbors. On a side of the house, they're like, you can't really see, even if you walk around our house, but like they have a weird angle at it from next to us. And they said, we think squirrels have gotten into your attic.
Uh-oh.
And then I got home.
Uh-oh.
And I found where the squirrels chewed through like part of the roof, like in a really weird spot to get into the attic. I looked in the attic, and the insulation has been chewed up, but I did not find evidence of the squirrels. I am sure there are squirrels up there. So, before I investigate, like, going down the road of, like, I'm probably gonna have to call a, you know, whatever, you know, go through the whole thing and somehow get these squirrels removed. I'm curious if people have had experience with this, like, particular sort of instance, and, like, what did you do? What do you do about these squirrels? Come at me.
I've had this experience. I had a place in North Bergen once that had, a bad squirrel problem, and I told my landlord. All right, so, God, we live on the second floor of a house, and it was me and two mm-hmm. of my friends, and the owner of the house was this, like, very, like, he was a nice guy, but he was a little arrogant, had a very, like, New York, New Jersey vibe to him. Like, his suit was not a good suit, but he wore it like it was, he was always wearing it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And his dad was internal affairs in the NYPD mm-hmm. and would just like right. sit out on the front porch and like smoke a cigar. And one time his dad and mom lived on the bottom floor.
So downstairs, yeah.
Downstairs. And one time they had me help install DVD or help fix their DVD player, which absolutely had pornography in it. 100%. She was very excited to watch it. I'm, you know, I'm glad I could fix her.
Wait, DVD the dude's player. Mom?
Uh-huh.
Cool.
We got a squirrel a couple of times. And the first time he brought me a metal, like, trap for the squirrel where you just put some peanut butter on a cracker, you put it in there, and it's one of those, like, you know, squirrel goes in, can't come out, like the door moves one way type of things. And so I got it, and I took it outside, and I took it, like, down the block, and I released it. And 2 days later, we got a squirrel again. And so I was like,
I've heard, I did read that when you release them, you got to take them like a mile away.
So
they can't find their way back.
We released them, and I was like, it came back. And so he showed up again with a baseball bat and was like, here you go. Take care of that. And I was like, excuse me? And so what I did is I trapped that squirrel again, and we got in our car with the squirrel, and I drove to a cemetery pretty far away and just let it go. And I was like, you got to – don't ever come back. As far as he knows, you're dead. That's why I took you to a cemetery. Just stay over here. We just don't need to talk about this squirrel. And that squirrel never came back. We never had a squirrel problem again.
Yeah, that reminds me a lot of Miller's Crossing, where Tommy claimed to –
Yes, 100%. Rob, have you ever had a squirrel problem?
No, but I definitely did enjoy watching my shitty slumlord neighbor just let squirrels destroy his entire roof. It was pretty amazing. Like, that place got Swiss cheesed by squirrels. It was incredible.
Was that an insurance scheme? Like, why?
No, because he was a negligent landlord. Like, he was a complete fucking dirtbag. Like, everyone in the neighborhood hated this guy because, like, everyone knew what he was doing. Like, he was basically just letting this place fall into complete neglect and then renting to whoever the fuck would put up with that.
God, that's brutal.
As you might expect, were people who tended not to put a lot of stock in the cleanliness and livability of their, of their home. And so we had, like, multiple, like, minor narcotics raids happen next door. The real high point was when one of my neighbors got in an argument with a sex worker on his front lawn. And she snarled at him, "No, I gotta leave. I got a 1 o'clock. I've been riding you around all morning. It's not my problem. You can't bust."
Wow.
And then she looks up and she's like, "And by the way,
she ain't wrong.
And by the way, your fucking neighbor is sitting on his porch, so maybe you want to take it down a notch." It was real good. I was real glad to leave that neighborhood.
Yeah.
Also,
okay.
Dude,
sure.
That was, by the way, sorry, that neighborhood. That neighborhood is fine. That was the wild part of this whole thing. This was like Faculty Row, basically, in my old college town. And this one dude just, like, bought this one distressed house and just, like, laid waste to it. And in no time at all, lots of weird and bad shit was happening in that neighborhood. And he was kind of the canary.
Well, it sounds like you learned a lot. Do you have a waypoint for this week, Rob?
Yeah. The Terror, which was a series, which I think it's wrapped up, but it's on AMC. But my God, is this 100% my shit. It is like Master and Commander meets The Thing. If that sounds interesting to you, it is.
That does sound interesting.
Yeah. It is a 19th century, like, Royal Navy Arctic expedition trying to find the Northwest Passage.
Wait, what was it called again?
The Terror.
Okay.
And so, yeah, they're up there trying to find the Northwest Passage. And there's a lot of signs that, like, hey, this is not a good idea. And they get stuck up there in the ice. And then they start to suspect that maybe they're not alone. And it's good because it's like, it's a boat full of, like, some of just the worst shitheads you can imagine. Like, so, like, there's a lot of sympathetic characters. It's got a tremendous cast. Kieran Hines is in it, who is in Tinker Tailor. Jared Harris is continuing to establish that he's one of the great character actors working these days. He's sort of the more competent of the naval officers on this expedition, the Cassandra type role.
Right.
But yeah, and the cool thing is, like, maybe, like, maybe they're being hunted just by a fucking pissed off polar bear. Or maybe they're being haunted by a monster that may or may not be, like, the embodiment of an Inuit revenge spirit.
Right.
And it's an extremely slow show. Like, the moments of, like, let's say you're not actually that interested in, like, the questions of, like, the supernatural or, like, them being hunted or whatever. It's less a show about the mystery of what's happening to them and more about, like, really long, methodical, like, meditations on, like, shitty men trapped on a ship increasingly realizing they are fucked. And so when stuff, like, quote-unquote stuff happens, like, it's more, like, punctuating moments over the course of, like, several episodes.
Gotcha.
That is just about pushing these people further and further into desperation. And it's a show that, like uses... sort of like the theatrics of horror and thriller as just a way of telling a increasingly tense story about, like, humans and people and what they do in a bad situation. I haven't seen the last couple of episodes, yeah. So maybe it gets, like, way more into that stuff as it goes along. But even if none of that stuff really appeals to you, one, it's not, like, particularly scary. Like, it's, you know, it's a little nerve-wracking at times, I suppose. But, like, it's not meant to scare you as much as kind of thrill you. And, like, it is much more of a character study of a group of men sort of, like, losing their minds. And it's really well done. I usually think TV, like, horror thriller stuff doesn't work very well because, like, the very nature of, like, advertisements, like, breaks all, like,
all
tension.
That tension. Yeah. Suddenly,
because you go from, like, to, like, oh, and here's how we fix your penis.
Arby's has all the, like, meat.
Right.
That's actually the same commercial, which is weird.
We get into weird collabs these days over at Arby's. But, yeah, I certainly echo Rob's endorsement. As someone, even from the side of, like, liking horror and stuff like that in television, I think it works really well. It's a
gorgeous really show, too. Like, if you like yes. just the terrifying immensity of the Arctic wilderness, this has got it in spades, man. This is a haunting show.
Awesome. It's AMC?
Yeah.
I'm guessing? Is that? Okay. Cool. Rad, I have the opposite thing, which is no tension. Well, still some tension, but no, like, not slow in any way, not particularly heady. Things do get fucked up. There's definitely, like, oh no, I fucked up. And that is a game called Wizard of Legend, which is, like, $15 on Steam. I think it's the same on the Switch store. I've been playing on Switch. It is a roguelite, very active, really, really rewarding and great feeling combat. It's kind of a top-down action RPG where you have one move on each face button, and then you can gain more moves on your triggers. And they're all spells. You're playing these kind of wizards who are going through these things called the Chaos Trials. And you kind of build a collection of attacks that can kind of combo together in different really interesting ways. And there's a ton of different attacks and modifiers. It's kind of the Binding of Isaac style special, like, relics that you get that can modify your abilities in different ways, whether that's letting you dash more often or increasing your kind of lightning powered attacks. It's a game that I am still pretty early in. I'm only, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours into, and I haven't unlocked a ton of new stuff. I feel like maybe the pacing on unlocks could be faster, but the core of it is so rewarding. It feels so good to dash around or to, like, combo, you know, summon a giant fist of, you know, rock and slam someone into the back of the wall and make them dizzy. And then, you know, use your electric bolt attack. And then when they kind of wake up from their stun, to use your freeze attack to freeze them and keep them stuck and dash, you know, then dash past them with your fire to kind of keep them to do damage over time. There's, like, really fun combos. It has, like, kind of a pixel art style, really, really, really good music. And it also just has, like, a really charming opening 5 minutes or 10 minutes of you walking through this museum dedicated to the Chaos Trials of old. And it's just, like, a bunch of people who are, like, visiting the museum and taking in the sights. It's such, like, you know, the rest of that game does not necessarily have that exact tone, but it's such a nice way to set up that this is going to be kind of a much lighter game than something like Binding of Isaac. And it really sells the kind of very bare-bones setting in a really charming, almost Studio Ghibli-esque way. So that is my recommendation. It's called Wizard of Legend. Definitely worth checking out. Not in early access or anything. It is just out. It's just out. And that's another nice thing. It's like, oh yeah, this is the game. This is it right here. This is it. I don't have to worry about it. It's not the Dead Cells of me being like, well, is that game out yet? Still not all the way. It's kind of getting there, but not 100%. Okay, I guess I'll keep waiting. So that is mine. All right, everybody, that is going to do it for us today. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Patrick?
Find me at Patrick Klubbing, tracking down squirrels.
Get those squirrels. People have squirrel tips. Send them to Patrick.
I am pretty sure outside of my office I saw. So, like, I cleaned out some of, like, the area to just get a sense of, like, the scale of the hole, which I'm not going to be able to do anything about. I don't have to hire someone to figure that part out. But, like, some of the remnants were down outside my office, and I saw a squirrel looking at it. And I was like, oh, you motherfucker. That's you. That's you.
That's a
you
fucking know, squirrel.
You're like, why is this stuff down yep. here? Yeah, that was up on that roof.
God.
Like, I'm on to you, buddy.
Great. Rob, where can people find you?
At Rob Zachman on Twitter.
Follow Waypoint at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, youtube.com/waypointvice, and we do live streams over at twitch.tv/waypoint. That is going to do it for us. Thank you, as always, to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can also... What else can you do? You can... Maybe that's it. Is that the only thing you can do? Oh, you can write in your questions again one more time, gamingadvice.com. Use the subject question to get put in that old bucket, and maybe we'll dig your question out and talk about it for a little bit, or make it apparently a whole episode like we did on Friday, where we talked about AI and robots and such, etc. I'm really mad I forgot to talk about Nier Automata. I let you down, Patrick. You left, and we did a whole episode about robots, and I didn't fucking talk about Nier. I feel like an asshole.
Wow.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. All right.
Well, at least you're acknowledging your
mistakes. Let's go out on that. Let's go. Listen, I'm so, so sorry. Danielle isn't here, so let me just say, I'm so, so sorry. Peace.
27 straight missed threes.
27!
Just
in a row.
Drive the net! Walk
it. Just drive the net! Just walk it in! Just walk it in.
They're gonna give you those mid-range field goals because you're not fucking taking them.
For them. It hurts so bad to watch that happen. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.